Okay. So I'm going to go back to the transition zone. We're going to look at under Antarctica, and not listed here, but you know, key to this research was my advisor Andy Nyblad, and then Maggie Benoit, who is now at MIT, were very helpful in this. A brief talk outline, a little bit of what, a little bit of how, some results that are reasonable, and then some weird results that maybe you guys can shed a little insight into. And what does it all mean? With Antarctica, the two main questions that the research were trying to address was, can you even use receiver functions in Antarctica? Because most of Antarctica and then going across the craton have vast quantities of ice, thick ice sheets, and would they cause too many reverberations that would hide your 410 and your 660 arrivals? And then the more important one is there any evidence for thinning of the transition zone between the 410 and 660? This is a map of Antarctica. And we have the East Antarctic Craton, which is very old and very thick and covered with ice. Then you have West Antarctica, which is a series of different accreted terrains, now covered with ice of varying thicknesses. It's separated by the Transantarctic Mountains, which are an unusual feature. They're very long, about 3,500 kilometers. They're very tall. And no one's entirely sure why they're there. They're non-compressional, so it's not as if we just had East Antarctica and West Antarctica, you know, parts smooshed together and throw them up. But some of the models do include, I think this is the next, reasons for why they're there is maybe there's a mantle plume that has helped somehow boost up either the craton and or the mountain range, or maybe there's just a localized thermal anomaly. There's some other more structural reasons too, but the ones I'm trying to test are have to do with if there's a plume or not. Now, previous studies, including ones that we've even seen results in earlier this week, actually, are from Siminski et al. And this is, I think, even the same cross-section that you showed before on Monday. So it goes from C to C prime. RS is the Ross Island. And they do show a very strong velocity anomaly there, believed to be a warm spot that seems to, you know, extend out towards the ridge and maybe extending to some depth. Then there seems to be a very clear line between the cold, what believed to be a colder anomaly, but definitely a faster velocity anomaly, believed under the craton of Antarctica. The more recent data from Watson 2005, and going to be published somewhere soon, hopefully, this was more of a large-scale regional study. There's stations are from islands around Antarctica, some of the permanent stations on Antarctica. Well, the results from this study are from a portable broadband array through Iris Pascal that was run, and so it's a very focused and, in theory, more detailed and better resolution scale. And they do show a slow anomaly under the Ross Island area. And when you look at it in cross-section, though, it doesn't seem to extend any further than maybe 250, 300 kilometers depth. And their resolution tests show that while there can be some smearing, you know, the results are fairly robust. The Lars diagram. But, you know, we of course know that in theory there should be a transition at the 410 and the 660. Clapeyron slopes tell us that what I'm looking for then with my receiver functions is this. Do I see a thin transition zone? I'm using data from the TAM size experiment, and so this is the normal way you tend to look at Antarctica, and Ross Island is down here. But the next maps are going to flip things all the way around and focus in closer. So now we have a close-up view. The Ross Sea, Transantarctic Mountains run roughly through there, East Antarctic Craton. And we have three different arrays, the north-south array blue, east-west array red, and then the yellow coastal stations, all running between roughly December 2000 to December 2003, of course only during the austral summers, because in the winter time they wouldn't function. And a close-up view. So of course, based on the alignment of the arrays, our best coverage and best most robust data should come from, where they all intersect around here. I used the Amen water level deconvolution, and I stacked using Owens codes from University of South Carolina, and so it's a geographical binning technique similar to what Anne was calling a common conversion point. Was very similar to what she was describing, so I won't go in. These are the piercing points at 410 kilometers and 660 kilometers depth, and so this tells you where my data is. You know, what this is where I can say things, because these are the points where the rays were going through at 410 and 660 depth. Just going back to the map again, this first stack I'm going to show you is along the east-west array. And there she is. I have a very strong 410 discontinuity. I have a very weak 660. And as you'll see on a lot of these plots, it's going to come down to what do you believe and how far can the 660 range. Because if you say, well, 660 is going to be here somewhere, then you say, well, is it there? Or is it really, really shallow and is it there? This is using 100 kilometer bins. So I took all those points and I binned them in 100 kilometer bins. And it's not quite clear. So to get an idea of a regional look, you know, because you say if your individual stacks aren't that clear, well, can you get a regional idea of what's going on? And then you can compare region to region, which is useful in this study because we can say, well, is the coastal and West Antarctic side different from the East Antarctic Craton side? And so this is a 300 kilometer radius bin stack. It roughly covers that area. And binned in one gymongous bin, we have a nice 410 and a very elongated but much more clear 660. And I believe this one is at 420 and then 690. So this gives a transition depth, transition zone thickness of 270 kilometers, which is almost 30 kilometers thicker than some of the global averages being thrown around. Some people, even if you say the global average is about 250, this is still thicker. So this definitely suggests that if you can believe the thermal anomaly in the upper mantle shown by the different other models, it does not extend to the transition zone, or to be honest, it's too small and we can't visualize it. All right, here's one around the north-south array.
On the previous slide.
That's a good question, and I don't have a firm answer for you. If you look at the Lars's phase diagram chart, it's there are possibilities that it might be from the transition. I believe it was the high pressure orthopyroxene or clerics. That chart will show up again, and we can look at it. I haven't positively identified it as anything. It wouldn't be a multiple from ice. My ICE people at Penn State say that the multiples would be a lot closer. Multiple from crust, possible. I have not looked into that, to be honest, and so I shall before we publish this. All right, this is a much longer stack. This is running the east-west array is about 300 kilometers. This is about 1,300 kilometers, and I will mention that the highest amount of information is here, and it gets sparser as we go to the left. And we do, again, have a fairly clear 410. And again, thinking about what do you believe in, there's something with reasonable strength on the 600, and then a 660 or something deeper that kind of goes and comes back, and then merges into what we would like to see, which is something around 660 kilometers. All right, so that one ran along that whole length of line. All right, these are my regional big bin stacks. These are all 300 kilometer bins, similar to the one I showed you a moment ago, which was E, located right there. And so now we have A, B, C, and D running. So you can roughly think of it as running from the left to the right of the map. And See, this is the one we saw before, and I drew in a 410. This is actually at 410 on the graph. This is 660, and just so you can give you an idea of where these are, this is about, this is on the 500 kilometer line. And they're getting kind of weird. There's some really strong arrivals below 410. These are at like 370, 380, and then another one of equal strength that's like 460, 470. And these are my weird ones. And they do continue pretty strongly as you go across the array going towards Ross Island. And so I'm just going to kind of skip through these, but I will point out that these are longitudinal stacks now. We're running along a north-south line of longitude. So you have, they start from 76 south latitude and go to 84 and 85 degrees latitude. So as you go across, these on the right-hand side are always going to be, they're closer, the stacks are close together, so there will be, they will look very similar from one stack to another. Straight lines show that there wasn't enough data to make my minimum requirements for a stack. So that just means there's not enough data. But you see this very strong double peak there. Neither one is the right depth for, you know, to say, hey, it's the 410. And so that's the question that we're throwing around right now. But these are in 10 degree longitudinal intervals. So there's 110, 120. You can see the two strongs, but then as you go further south, they seem to blend into one strong 410. 130, 140, 150. We're almost to the coast now, so we're getting the higher data coverage. And this double seems to stop at a higher or less high latitude. 160. Now this is roughly, I would say 160 or 162 degrees longitude is roughly parallel to the coastal stations. So now we're sampling, especially in this area, we are getting data from the east-west array, the end of the north-south array, and the coastal stations. And that double peak is gone. We just have a single peak that seems to lose coherency over here. 170, we're now going over the ocean. We have a very deep 410 or a very shallow 410. Oops. 160 is, you can't even call it from there. And then my last one is from 180, which has a shallow to actually a deeper arrival. So this is the one where, after seeing one of Lars's talks, I was speculating, well, maybe, you know, could we have that one? Because that one's about 300. Then we have the 400 and the 600. I don't think the ice layer is, you know, my results and preliminary question mark, because, you know, I'm definitely open to help in this. But the ice layer is not causing the double peak, but what is uncertain. The average transition zone throughout the study area is thicker than the global average. So that indicates that if there is a thermal anomaly, it is restricted to the upper mantle. And that's it.
Missed part of this, but
that's right.
When you're showing these cross sections, are you just under the
Build-up
anomaly, or do you actually transition? Because you have this very
sharp
transition between the low and the
high.
Do you erase?
I am going. Yes.
Do you see any different
conditions
of
depth
associated with this condition?
There. Let me get a view of. She doesn't have. The change from the warm to the colder, the blue and the red, that you see in some of these is usually they believe it's right under the Transantarctic Mountains, and they tend to say that it's a very sharp discontinuity. Very suddenly you're going from very red to very blue. The stacks that I did show do go across that, because actually, let me get the geological map, that'll be even better. The transition would be right here in the large-scale tomographic models, and the series of stacks about like that, Jesse. So kind of like. Yeah.
So at what point in your stacks does it change from being is there a change in your stacks from being in the low velocity region to being in the high velocity region?
Can you show one of your stacks that goes across?
The one that would go all the way across would be the north-south line. Oh, you have a really sensitive. It's bad. That would be this one.
So where would be
the transition would probably be, let's see, it's 10 kilometers across the east-west. It's going to be way over here somewhere. Which looks like, you know, it does suggest that perhaps, you know, this is somehow related to the craton, because we do get the best. This is also where we have, it also is a question of, is it sampling, because our best, the most data points are here also. And so is this an artifact of not enough data somehow? I don't know, I'm not certain, because that's about an 80 kilometer difference. I don't know if, you know, if the crust was suggested, if you could have that much of a reverberation from the crust.
Saying that it necessarily comes from the crust, you can calculate that in seconds, but if you have such strong lateral variations in the tomographic model, you would expect possibly deeper, that you would have some differences in the depth somewhere, or something like that, going from one to the other. It seems you do, because if you're putting the transition at 200 minus 200 and something, that's where you have some changes.
Yeah, there's definitely
a... Are they differences, or are they real?
So when you assign these depths, these various reflectors, what kind of velocity model are you using? Do you use a different one in the hot region versus the cold region?
Yes. On this one's actually kind of nice, because it's running right along the north-south array. And if you remember, or I can show it up again, the Watson model had coverage. And so I'm actually using the Watson tomographic velocity model where it's available. And so, any place, it's an unfortunate thing is that I actually have, my coverage area is larger than Watson's model, and so when I go outside of that tomographic model, I'm using just the ASCII-91 model. So, but this line should be taking full advantage of a recently generated tomographic model for what that's worth. Between the two, the difference, I ran, these were my 3D stacks and I ran 1D, and they aren't significantly different, no.
Structurally, this is one of the major rift zones on Earth. And I don't think we should be focusing on whether there's a plume signature as much as looking at it as a major, major rift zone. Turns out our private mountains are just an uplifted block on one side of any asymmetric rift.
Mm-hmm.
And that the rift shows up really clearly in the water. The slow zone is dead under the rift. And I don't know how you would rethink the positions of where you're getting data. But a north-south line will run right along the uplifted shoulder of the rift. But if you're running crosswise to that, you're going to be mixing all kinds of different provinces.
Yeah, they tried. They tried to cross, you know, across the Transantarctic Mountains and into the craton. If we could, and maybe with getting better ocean bottom, you know, we could have more stations on both sides of the wars of the rift system, because that would be ideal. I think that, I mean, it's... The blue line. And so it's not truly north-south, as you can see. The yellow line are just the coastal stations, and so perpendicular to our north-south line is our east-west line. Was there any Is that just the best names, you know, convenient naming?
Yeah, it was also when the pilots go off of a grid north versus grid south, which is completely different from geographic north.
Oh, wow.
So that lined up better with the grid north and south, so we could talk to the pilots.
Learn something new.
How low do your PIP stations?
They went from December 2000 to December 2003. Not all stations the whole time. Thereabouts. But of course, it wasn't 12 months. You know, 4 to 6 months were actually.
How many earthquakes?
I can't remember the earthquakes, but the station, the event earthquake pairs are about 2,000. So.
How many stations?
17. It's like 50.
There should have been 42 plus, you probably had South. Scott Base, Vanda, and Terranova.
It's like 45-ish or so. A couple were really bad, so.
What university?
This study, I'm from Penn State. The TAMSI study was done through Washington University and Penn State. So they've got a couple publications out already and about to come out on different things.